Well, folks, here we are for our culture segment. And, you know, you may wonder why we name this the culture segment. And it is because we do like to address what is going on in the culture. And we do that often by interviewing whether authors or theologians, different folks who are out there in the arts. And today we get to talk to a researcher. Woohoo! But this is going to be exciting research for all of you. I have Stephen Martin. He is from the Urban Institute. Welcome, Stephen.
I'm happy to be here, Lisa.
Very good to have you. And he is, now for those of you that aren't familiar with the Urban Institute, in fact, Stephen, maybe I'll let you explain it better. I mean, this has been around, wasn't it like President Johnson that kind of instituted it for accurate and unbiased kind of reporting on a number of different social structures?
Yes, that's what the plan was. And the fact that President Nixon kept us going seems to indicate that we were good enough at being unbiased that both Democrats and Republicans have kept us around.
Well, good. That's good to hear. Well, we have our own research team here at Focus on the Family, and it often seems, you know, I don't know if people have a love-hate relationship with them because we know we need that research, but then sometimes, you know, and this wasn't as much the case with what I read from you here. I mean, usually I look at it and I'm just like, you know, my eyes are bugging out because I'm looking at all these graphs and stuff. But you have some very interesting findings, things that you did with a couple of your colleagues there in publishing a report called Fewer Marriages, More Divergence, Marriage Projections for Millennials to Age 40. And I told you this was of interest to me because I am now on the other side of 40 and have kind of looked back and said, wow, what happened? And why is my age group, I think my age group overall had an 82% or has an 82% marriage rate at this point by 40. And if you look at, if you drive it down into ethnicity, white women are like at 87%. And so I truly am an outlier. I don't know if I'm, that makes me feel good or bad. But I want to talk about this a little bit more as a whole. Can you just share as we kind of launch into this discussion, Stephen, some of the top stats from the study and why really this became a subject of interest to your team there?
Okay. Oh, may I just start with a bit of reassurance that with our nation as large and diverse as it is, even us outliers have plenty of company. Mm-hmm. So if you're among 13%, that's still millions of people. So please don't feel alone.
Okay. I'll try not to.
I will start with, I guess, a little bit of our background for what we were thinking of. I have two fine co-authors, Nan Marie Estone and Liz Peters, both here at Urban Institute. And we were initially motivated by watching the Great Recession and what it was doing to young adult lives. And so essentially our question was, what happens to your marriage prospects when the economy comes along and takes a big 5-year bite out of your young adulthood?
Yeah.
And we brought together some demographic techniques and used, as our starting position, Gen X. People born around 1970, which it sounds like you might be considered a representative of that group.
That is me in the 70s, yes.
Right. And we found out how many remained single out to age 40 among that group. And then we tried two different what-if stories to see what would happen after that. One what-if was kind of what-if marriage rates stay as they are and have been through the recession, which is pretty low. And the other is a little more optimistic, is what if there was a bounce back? And yes, like you mentioned, we looked at all women, all men, we looked at different racial groups, but one thing that really jumped out was the difference between what is happening to college grads and what's happening to non-grads. So if I can bring up some of the numbers here. Right now, for all college graduate women, if you're a member of Gen X, there's about an 84% chance that you would have married by age 40. That still leaves 16%, which is millions who haven't. Mm-hmm. Depending on the assumptions we make, if things stay as they are for college grads, that'll go down to about 79% for, say, women who are just getting out of college now, say they were born around 1990. So 84 to 79 is a little down, but that's not much. And if college graduates' marriage rates bounce back to what they were right before the recession, it'll be right back up to 84%.
Hmm. Yeah.
So I can leave out the men's story, which is pretty much the same, a couple different points. But the idea is that for college graduate women and men, they will more or less ride out the recession with, they'll be able to catch up afterwards with either somewhat fewer or no fewer marriages than went on before.
Yeah. Can you talk to us a little bit about why the recession is having such a big impact? I know our team was in a meeting with a group downtown a month or so ago, and one of the guys on that team is a millennial and said that he's been dating his girlfriend, I think, for like 5 years, and they're just putting off marriage, and he cited finances, you know, and he has these expectations of, I need to buy this kind of ring, I need to buy this, and I'm just like, you know, frustrated saying, oh my goodness, can you get this thing done at some point, or is there any hope for you? So I'm just wondering, is that the mentality that's going on among millennials? I mean, why is this recession such a factor, I guess?
A lot of that is uncertainty. So from here, I'm going to step down off of my demographer podium and put myself as someone who's interested in the topic just like you are, so we can discuss the reasons. I would say definitely finances has had something to do with this. Everybody's labor force participation is down, and when they get into the job market, their incomes aren't as high as they used to be, or they're just barely at the levels they used to be. And this is getting a little less attention than perhaps it should, but one group that has been hit very hard by the recession is people in their 20s trying to get into the labor force.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were already in your 30s or you were already established in the labor force by the time the recession really hit in 2008, that might not have affected your career as much. But if you graduated high school or just got out of college into the teeth of the recession, it was very difficult to find steady work that does things like pays off your college debt, allows you to move out of your parents' home, and things like that. That doesn't mean it's impossible to marry if you're living in your parents' home, but it makes things a little more complicated.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk just a little bit, too, about why there are such ethnic and racial differences. And I know that's not, you know, unique specifically to this study. We've known that for a long time. In fact, I've talked on the show before about our our Black female listeners who are just like, is there any hope for me getting married? The numbers are so bleak in my case. And of course, these are women who are highly educated, women who desire marriage on many fronts. And so what is driving into that? I thought, for example, the Hispanic numbers were quite surprising because Hispanics as a culture as a whole value marriage highly, and it's very much part of their heritage. So what's playing into that?
One thing that has been true of women of Hispanic ancestry and men of Hispanic ancestry is that they tend to be poorer than whites. And although there are a lot of cultural patterns where people who have lived in other countries relatively recently often tend to bring a cultural perspective that's more marriage-centric. But on the other hand, simply being poorer often matters more.
Hmm.
So starting at Gen X, Hispanics were about 8 to 10% less likely to be married by age 40 than whites were. And all the projection series have those numbers going down for Hispanics, just as they do for whites.
Mm-hmm.
I can say this. For whites, Hispanics, and blacks, all of those groups, if you take them as a whole and don't account for education, all of those groups have predicted marriage rates that are going to be going down.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit more difficult to figure out the predictions for college grad, non-grad within those. And so I'm a little reluctant to predict, but I have seen other research elsewhere that indicates that for non-Hispanic, for black women and men, not only are marriage rates, you know, historically lower than for whites, but being a college graduate does seem to be less of an insurance that you will actually get married.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's bad news or really why that's happening, but it definitely seems to be happening.
Sure. And even the education findings surprised me a little bit, because my first thought, and of course this was just my first impression, was huh, that's weird, because I would think that educated women, for example, would be more likely to say, oh, I don't need marriage, or I don't need it yet because I am self-sustaining, and so I'm going to go out and live all this life and not make marriage a priority. But you're saying that education actually was a factor in contributing to a higher marriage rate. Why do you think that is?
Oh, yes. Actually, before I talk about why that is, I wanted to sort of pile on, because we were a little surprised by this.
Yeah.
There is so much that you're hearing now about things that have been happening to college graduates that would seem to make it harder and harder for them to get married. You know, piling up student debt, I know you've talked about on previous shows.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a large college debt, that would seem to make it less likely that someone would want to marry you and take on that debt. More recent college graduates are living with their parents. They're having a harder time getting jobs straight out of college than they used to.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I know people have spoken about in terms of a cultural perspective is millennials who go to college are finding more and more of a skewed sex ratio within college. I don't know how much you've had chances to speak about this.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people have spoken about, if America's colleges are 40% male and 60% female, that often might give the young men more license to behave childishly. I'm not sure to what extent I follow the data on that, but the argument certainly makes sense.
Yeah.
So
we'd
one
make
might
that argument about churches, too.
Mm-hmm.
That the ratios are pretty much 60-40, if that, we feel. So, yeah.
Right. So there are a lot of reasons to expect that college graduates might be becoming less likely to marry, but they are the ones who seem to be holding on.
Hmm.
So go figure. My personal theory, and I haven't gotten this one vetted by published research, so please take this with a grain of salt, is that I think that to a large extent college graduates have already come prepared with a set of behavioral and cultural expectations that makes them more likely to be able to ride out something like a recession.
Okay.
If you go to college, that means that you're pretty much committed to spending at least 4 years as a young adult, but not having a baby or getting married.
Mm-hmm.
And so that there are certain behaviors, you know, whether it's, you know, abstinence or using contraception effectively, and also a commitment to, you know, thinking in a long term, I'm going to marry 5 or 10 years down the line, I'm just going to keep waiting and be patient. That might have set up college graduates more effectively to ride out an additional 5-year waiting stretch.
Yeah. Now, I think, too, another factor that comes into play in the culture, and of course we, you know, very much approach our show from a Judeo-Christian ethic, but let's talk a little bit, and of course this is major speculation, how acceptable is it not to marry? I mean, because I think also for many college graduates, they're like, if they're going to cohabit or be in multiple relationships, they can protract, you know, singleness in the sense of not specifically marrying, because they're going to either test drive their relationship or relationships or wait out, kind of like this guy's doing, for that time when he can purchase the ring and the house with the picket fence and make all his dreams come true. Are you seeing that becoming more acceptable in the millennial generation as a whole, and how's that playing into the, you know, hitting age 40 and still being single?
Right. Ooh, I'm a little unclear with what goes on in terms of people's expectations at specific ages.
Mm-hmm.
I can say that college graduates have kind of been the champions at putting things off.
Yeah.
They traditionally are the ones who start marrying later, and even within recent decades, like for Gen X, it wasn't just waiting until after you finish college. Many would wait 5 or 10 years after they finished college, or even more, and even those who married right away out of college would often wait several years before starting to have a family.
Hmm.
So there's definitely a culture of just, you know, waiting and be patient and, you know, wait for opportunities and things to be what you think is right. Now, one thing in terms of cohabitation and living together, college graduates do that, but they seem to draw the line at having children within a cohabiting relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That might be changing a little bit, but it's only by a couple percent.
Mm.
The latest statistics I saw, maybe 9% of college graduates had a non-marital first birth by the time they're 40,
mm-hmm.
which is far, far below any other group.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's kind of a mixture of things that you wait for and things that you don't wait for.
Right.
There, many are not waiting for establishing a cohabiting relationship, but almost all are waiting on having a baby.
Sure. Okay. Well, let's talk, Stephen, as we just finish out here, with you summarize kind of a couple findings as a result of all the research. And the first one, of course, being, you know, looking, you even have the graphs that project, you know, between now and, say, 2030, if recession rates stay the same, or if, you know, then ultimately marriage rates are going to continue to decline, what that looks like. And you say that one major, you know, aha as a result of this is, okay, here come the singles. And in the U.S. population in particular, where singles, I mean, I've heard stats that say that there are now 50% of the U.S. is single, if you take into account people who cohabit, people who are divorced and widowed. What do you see as far as the implications the next 10 to 20 years with a single population starting to, you know, maybe I don't even know if I'm saying this facetiously, but rule the world in that sense?
Let's see. I don't see them rule the world, but I do see it being a much more diverse world.
We want to, Stephen. We want to rule the world. No, I'm just teasing.
Oh, okay. Well, I think that the difference from the past is that America in previous decades was a place where mid-adults were all married, like mm-hmm. pretty much all of them. And that is changing in a lot of ways. And so what our world is having to adjust to is from a world where it was pretty easy for people, you know, for economies, for governments to know what to expect, for having mid-adults as kind of this cohesive, predictable sort of center of family life, to a future where things are in a lot of different directions. We'll have a lot of married couples with children. We'll have some more married couples without children because they're marrying later. We'll have single couples that have children but don't marry, and we'll have a lot of singles that don't marry at all. Among the things that people at Urban Institute are interested in and concerned about is, what does this do for housing markets?
Hmm.
You're going to have a situation where in the past, lots of people would have the expectation that, you know, you get a finish your education, get a career started, marry, and have a family and a house. When the order of things becomes much more uncertain, where does the house fit in? Are we going to have families living more often in apartments? Are they still going to be buying houses, but later? And these sorts of questions are important for all sorts of people, you know, for the construction industry trying to figure out what to plan for governments trying to figure out how to set property taxes and fund schools. All sorts of things are just going to be up in the air, and we're going to have to having to figure those things out.
Yeah, which is interesting because I think you also see now singles, especially late 20s into their 30s and into their 40s, that are purchasing their own homes ultimately. So as they become financially more stable and have a stronger move, you know, more strongly into their careers, then if they choose to marry, then you've got two individuals with their homes, and they're either going to offload one or they're going to choose to rent one. And so, like you said, I really think it does change the landscape in that sense.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, well, any final thoughts, Stephen? Anything that you see moving ahead, moving forward with information like this? What does this mean kind of for what you guys do at the Urban Institute?
Okay, I do have a final thought for myself. And I wanted to make sure I did not imply by this study, I use age 40 as kind of a stopping point, but I don't want to imply at all that age 40 is the stopping point for marriage.
Mm-hmm. That's encouraging. Thank you.
The main thing I run out of is the ability to predict what might happen after.
Mm-hmm.
And what is happening is, for the first time ever, more and more people, single and open to the idea of marriage, are reaching age 40. So who knows what might be happening after that age for marriage.
Sure.
There could be a lot of marriages to kind of overcome all this, and there could be very few at all if it becomes a standard, you know, way of living life.
Yeah.
Another issue in terms of bringing up one more thing that people at the Urban Institute are interested in is that this measurement of decline in marriage brings up a very important issue for people who are concerned about policy in the family, which is finding a proper balance and trade-off between two very important issues that you'd like to support. One is to make sure that our policies, both from government and, say, workplace policies, help support marriage and families, while at the same time recognizing that it's often the single-parent families who are having the most difficulty and are most in need of help.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes things very complicated and difficult to pull off successful policy and for employers, good workplace policies. And whatever we're learning about that in terms of this country, we're probably going to have to do even more of it, even better, as we move into society where more people under 40 remain single.
Yeah, good thoughts. Well, I've been talking with Stephen Martin. He is with the Urban Institute. We've been talking about a body of research that he and his two colleagues produced called Fewer Marriages, More Divergence, Marriage Projections for Millennials to Age 40. And those of you, whether you're an Xer or you're a millennial, I think we've seen some good findings here. So, Stephen, thanks so much for your work on this. Please pass along our thanks to Liz and Nan as well.
And yes, thank you, Lisa.
Yeah, and do stay in touch with us. Anything else that comes out that we should be aware of, we love to. We have a good, eager audience who's willing to evaluate this and apply it as well. So thanks much for your time.
Oh, you're welcome.